This is What Matters Most, and I'm Matt Popovitz. Look, life is crazier than ever, and lots of people, maybe even you, are feeling anxious and overwhelmed. Today's message is designed to help you figure out what's most important and to experience the peace and joy that God intends for you. Because life is a gift, and it shouldn't be wasted on worry. I'd like to give you a resource, something to help you navigate the road ahead. Just go to mattpopovitz.com, click on the icon, and we'll send it to you. That's mattpopovitz.com. And hey, if you happen to live in the Houston area, I'd love to see you on a Sunday morning at St. Mark in Spring Branch. Head to stmarkhouston.org to plan your visit. Here's today's message. Thanks for listening. Today we are continuing a teaching series called The Christian Citizen. You and I have many callings in life. You have the calling to your family, your son, your daughter, your mom, your dad, your cousin. You have the calling to your work. You may be a boss, an employee. You have the calling to this church. You're part of this family. But you also have that calling as citizen. And just like every other calling that you have, it carries with it certain responsibilities, things we are asked to do. And what we're talking about in this series is how our faith in Christ informs that responsibility. We began by talking about how Christians believe that Jesus Christ right now is the flesh and blood King of the universe, ruling over all things, and how that is the lens through which we should view all things that are happening around us in our city, in our nation, in our world. And the fact that Christ is ruling in flesh and blood as King should give us some peace in this world. No matter what crazy thing we see on television, no matter what crazy thing we hear in a stump speech from someone, we ultimately temper that with the truth that Jesus is King. Now, today what we're going to talk about is something a little different. Today we're going to talk about how, as citizens of this city, of this nation, of this world, we are called as Christian citizens to speak. We are called, empowered by the Spirit, to speak up and to be a force for good. I like to think that society, the citizenship that we're a part of, is configured kind of like the parts of an atom. Go with me on this imperfect analogy. You might recall from your seventh grade science class that the parts of an atom are made up of positives, negatives, and neutrals. So you see it right up there. The parts of an atom, positive, negatives, and neutrals. And the thing about neutrals is that they take on the charge of whichever other ones they're around. So if a neutral is around a positive, it becomes positive. And if a neutral is around a negative, it becomes a jerk. That's right. That's the right answer. Now, in society as well, throw up the next slide, there are some real positives, people who are working for the good of all. There are some real negatives, people who are working some not so good things. And we might disagree on who those are, who the positives are, who the negatives are. But then there's also a lot of people who are just neutrals. They don't have a particularly strong voice. They kind of mind their own business. And they tend to just go along for the ride with whoever is the loudest, right? Now, when the church is empowered by the Holy Spirit to go out into the world as citizens, which of those three do you think God wants his church to be? He wants us to be the positives, right? He wants us to be those who are living and serving and working toward the good of all. We heard an example of this earlier from the Old Testament and a woman named Esther. She's so important, she has an entire book of the Bible named after her. She lived in a time when the Jewish people were scattered under the rule of the Persians. And despite that fact, she, as a Jew, rose to prominence in the Persian palace, being chosen as a bride to the king. And she became queen of the Persian Empire. And then she ended up speaking up and risking her life and leveraging her position in the citizenship of Persia to free and help God's people. And there's that moment where Mordecai comes to her and he tries to convince her to be a positive, to don't be a neutral, certainly don't be a negative, be a positive force that can draw other people in the direction of freedom. Here's what Mordecai says. He says, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish." And this is the critical line. This is so beautiful. "And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this." In other words, Mordecai says, look, this is a messy situation, and I believe that God is ultimately going to get his will done. But don't you think, and this is so good, don't you think that God put you where you are for a purpose? Don't you think he put you in this kingdom, where you are in the kingdom, for just such a time as this? And that, my friends, is the heart of the Christian view of citizenship. Now, since people of faith claim to be a part of the family of God, we have a unique understanding of what it means to speak up. We have a unique understanding of what it means to be that positive force working for the good of all. People of faith have the task, the responsibility in their citizenship to not just speak up and be a kind person, but people of faith who claim to be a part of God's family, forgiven through the grace of Jesus Christ, we are called when we speak up to speak on behalf of God. Which is a big role to play, and it can be abused, and it can be done poorly, it can be done wrongly, but it's still the calling of the church, even though she messes it up a lot. To use biblical language, what Christians believe is that people of faith have a prophetic role to play in society. People of faith, people who are part of God's family, have a prophetic role to play in God's family. What that means is prophets do two things. Prophets remind and prophets inspire. A prophet reminds and a prophet inspires. So let's look at how this gets lived out in our role as citizens called to speak up, to speak on behalf of God as a prophetic people, to remind and inspire. Let's talk about the reminding piece. You and I, we live in a very unique country. We really do. And those of you who've come from other nations, you can probably attest better than I even to the uniqueness of this nation. This is the most diverse country in the world by population. And this room is a great snapshot of that reality. It's also one of the most creative nations in the world. This is the country that brought the world the light bulb, the iPhone, the ramen burger. If you don't know what the ramen burger is, look it up, Google it. Invented in Brooklyn in 2013, it'll change your life. And our governance is unique. How we are ruled is very, very unique. We're a nation of laws, but we are also a nation of guaranteed rights. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution are called the Bill of Rights. They're things that you are guaranteed as a citizen. It lists things like freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. We don't have to have a permit to do this. Freedom to a trial by a jury of our peers. That last one, I was trying to explain to our Finnish intern earlier this week that part of our responsibility as citizens is to guarantee a fair trial by your peers, of your peers, to your fellow citizens. And I told her that we love it so much that when the summons comes in the mail, we all say, "Great, I'm an American." And then she could tell I was lying, and I explained to her that it's much more like this. "Great, I'm an American." We're a country of laws and rights. And when this first started, it was truly unique. But there's a flaw in the system. And it's a flaw that our founding fathers knew about, and they spoke openly about. The founding fathers, when they wrote the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all of these things, they noted that this unique setup of laws and guaranteed rights only really works. It only works if there is an awareness among the people of the divine. Here's a quote from John Adams. He said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Now, what John Adams is not saying is that everybody in this country should be Christian. He's not saying that. He is not even saying that everyone in this country should be a believer. Not at all. What he's saying is that this idea, if you look at the context of that quote, that this idea of guaranteed rights and supporting laws is built upon a bigger idea of all the people having a sense of collective accountability to a higher power for how they use those freedoms. That without the people having a collective sense of higher accountability, higher than the president, higher than the government, for how they use those freedoms, then those guaranteed freedoms will become self-indulgent. And when guaranteed freedoms become self-indulgent, things we use purely to look out for ourselves and further ourselves, laws have to become more excessive. You see, when you lose the sense that your rights are a gift to be managed for the good of not just yourself, but the good of your neighbor, according to a higher standard, you will use them for what humans use everything: selfish gain. How does this right make me right? And how does this right make me better? And when people start using rights for selfish gain, more and more laws have to be created to protect your right from my right. And when more and more laws get created to regulate this and that and this, because people are no longer regulating themselves about how to love their neighbor, guess what goes away? The very freedom that everyone holds so dear and is trying to use to their advantage. Are you following with me? And the founders knew this. They said the only way to avoid that kind of critical failure is if people restrain themselves and out of a sense of responsibility, they hold themselves accountable to something, someone greater than government. So what does the prophetic role of the Christian citizen look like? It's to remind the people with power of that divine accountability. That yes, we are afforded rights that are self-evident and endowed by our Creator, but because they're self-evident and endowed, we are not just blessed, but we must be responsible. It's the first thing we do.
I hope you're enjoying today's message. For more of what matters most, you can head to mattpopovitz.com. There you'll find other messages. You can support this ministry as well as access your free gift. Oh, and if you're looking for a local church and you live in Houston, come and see what's happening at St. Mark Houston. To plan your visit, head to stmarkhouston.org. Thanks for listening, and back to today's message.
It's only one side of the coin. There's another aspect to this. No law by any country can ever bring out the best in that country. No law that has ever passed or ever will be passed will make us a better nation. Laws simply show us the behavior to avoid. They do not show us the kind of people we can become. Every society must be reminded of its accountability to something bigger. We are responsible for our rights. But also, every society has to be inspired towards virtue. It has to be inspired towards something bigger and greater. Look at these words from Isaiah in the Old Testament. He describes God's people. And he talks about how God's people are not put in this world to bless themselves, but to shine a light as a beacon for the rest of the world. Isaiah 49, "It is too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved of Israel." This is God speaking through Isaiah. "I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth." Now, certainly, Isaiah is speaking primarily of God's call for people to share about the unending mercy in Jesus Christ that's available to all people. But also, he's talking about how they are to use their voice to shine a light into the world about who God is and who he has created us to be. We are to remind one another of our ultimate accountability, and we are to inspire one another to higher virtue. Now, the big question is, what does this look like practically? And that's a great question. Now, some people, when they say, this is what it looks like practically, to hold people accountable and inspired in their virtue, some people answer it in purely political ways. They would say, well, this is why people of faith all need to vote together as one block. Or they would say, this means all Christians should rally against this issue or protest that person. And I would say that there is certainly a place for politics, but I would argue that there's something more powerful than politics. Something more powerful than politics is the way people of faith choose to live their own lives. The most powerful way citizens speak prophetically as citizens is with their own lives and with their own friends and with their own families and with their own jobs. Here's what I mean. My greatest social impact is when I, as a follower of Jesus, I leverage my rights, uncompelled by any law, to love other people. It's when I do that. You see, in a world where everybody's looking for a loophole and rights are being used largely for selfish gain, a woman, a man who uses his or her freedom to become a servant to someone else's joy is a revolutionary. It will cause the world to ask why. You don't have to do that. You have a right to not do that. Yes, but I also have a responsibility to something greater. And it will inspire those who are on the receiving end of that sacrifice to do the same. That is the most powerful force in the world. Galatians chapter 5. Paul says this, "You were called to freedom, brothers and sisters, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh to serve yourself, but through love serve one another. For the whole law, everything God wants from humanity is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another," that's a reference to people looking out for themselves and protecting each other, "watch out that you are not consumed by one another." So Paul says, look, people of faith, you are a free people. You are released from the burden of trying to save yourself via religious rules and regulations. You are covered in mercy and grace. You are free. But use your freedom to do what? To love and to serve, not because you have to, but because you have been loved, to love others in the exact same way you want to be loved. And in doing that and in pursuing that, it is the height of what God desires for his creation. And it influences and impacts and changes the world. Get personal for a moment. As a man or woman, you have a right to do with your body whatever you want, to sleep with whoever you want. That is your right as a citizen. But if you choose to use those rights to pursue a slightly higher sexual ethic that tries to honor God, embraces virtues like commitment, and affords the same dignity to the men and women in your life that you'd want given to your sister or your son in life, you are living prophetically. As an individual, you have every right to make as much money or as little money as possible and to keep all of it to yourself. That's your right. And you have the right to work every tax law in your favor and every regulation to your benefit. That's your right. But if you instead use that right to ensure that others have opportunity and many benefit from your generosity, not assuming the generosity of others, you are living prophetically. And imagine a day when all of God's people put their picket signs down, walked away from their keyboards, and embraced that call to leverage their rights to love the person next to them. That day would do more good than any law that's ever passed, any president that's ever been elected, and any pundit on television. We are called to speak humbly and boldly and confidently with words, even activism, to remind the world that we are accountable to something bigger and to inspire in others a beauty that no law can. But the greatest way we speak is not simply with our words, but the love of our lives. That's the way we speak. Now, you might be asking a really good question right now, and that really good question is this. Why should I do that? Because I have the right not to do it. And you are correct. You have the right not to do that. Why should I speak up in a society through a life of responsibility over rights, a life of justice over self-justification, a life of honoring God over helping myself? Why should I do that? Here's why. And I would say it's not because you have to. If you're here as a follower of Jesus Christ, the reason you will do this is because you have been inspired to. It's not because you've been told to. It's because this kind of love has already been given to you. We heard about Esther, who leveraged her place in the palace to free an oppressed people. Well, you have a king in Jesus Christ who has refused to serve himself, but has given his own life to remove any and all guilt you have with God. It's all gone. You have a God in Jesus Christ who has set aside his strength and become a slave to every struggle in this world so that through his struggle you might be set free, and you are free. You are forgiven. You are beloved. You are cherished and chosen. You have a place in the royal kingdom now. And God is not demanding that you live a life of prophetic love. He has given to you and inspired in you a life of prophetic love. This is who you are. This is what you've received. This is what you've been set free to do. What else can you do? That's why we'll do it. I want to leave you with what I think is a great example of this. In 2005, a man named Jameel McGee on the west side of Michigan, my home state, Jameel McGee was arrested for dealing drugs. And he was charged and he was convicted and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. And the entire time he maintained his innocence. And he claimed that the charges were made up, that he was framed, and that he should be set free. And he was telling the truth. Andrew Collins is the officer that arrested him, and Andrew Collins later admitted that he made up everything. That Jameel McGee had done nothing wrong, that Andrew instead planted the drugs, made up the story, and framed him. Collins was later busted for framing at least 50 individuals, and he served a year and a half in prison. McGee, however, before being released, served 4 years of his 10-year sentence for a crime he never committed. Fast forward to 2015, this time last year, April of 2015, both men, by I would say divine coincidence, end up working at the same cafe. Collins is a manager at the cafe. He's been released from prison. The new employee, McGee, comes to him for training, and they notice each other. McGee confronted Collins, the bad cop, about what he'd done, and Collins apologized. And McGee, a self-professed follower of Jesus, he looked Collins in the eyes, and he said, "I forgive you." And Collins, when asked about the story, he said, "I just started weeping because he doesn't owe me that. He doesn't have to give me that. He had every right to withhold that. I don't deserve that." And Collins is correct. McGee had every right to hold on to the hurt from the cop that framed him. He had every legal recourse to sue him, and no one would blame him if he refused to work with him. But McGee said, "I'm accountable for my freedom to someone greater. And I believe that we all can aim for something higher." So he used his freedom to love the man who stole his freedom. And he forgave him. And these two men are now friends. That's Jameel on the left and former police officer Andrew Collins on the right. Their story is unique, but it speaks louder than any law, and it's more loving than any right that you've been guaranteed. That's the kind of thing that changes the world. That's what it means, in part, to speak up as a citizen filled with faith. That's what it means to leverage your rights for a higher responsibility and to inspire in others a greater virtue. That's what it means to give to somebody else what we have been given in Jesus Christ.
Hey, it's Matt. I hope you enjoyed What Matters Most. Here's what I need you to know. Life is a gift, and it shouldn't be wasted on worry. I want to help you figure out what's most important and to experience the peace and joy that God intends for you. So for more content, you can head to mattpopovitz.com. That's mattpopovitz.com. There you can also support this ministry, as well as access your free resource, a little something to help you navigate the road ahead. I'd also love to see you on a Sunday morning. If you're in the Houston area, head to stmarkhouston.org to plan your visit. In the meantime, hit me up on Instagram at mpopovitz or at facebook.com/mattpopovitzministries. Thanks for listening. Now go and hold tight to what matters most.